Brembo Red High Performance Podcast.
Welcome back to a special edition of Brembo Red here at the 2021 Concours d'Elegance in Plymouth, Michigan. From a car guy standpoint, I don't think it gets any better than this, looking out at beautiful cars. Should have been on the fairways this year. Had a little bit of a late-breaking weather issue, so we had to move everything around, but it's looking beautiful anyway at the Inn of St. John's here in Plymouth. A beautiful summer day. Yeah, I know. This is a really tough job for us here. And as our special guest on this episode, we have the 2021 Collector of the Year at this year's Concours, Joseph Cassini III. Thanks, Joe, for being with us here on this beautiful day.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Dan.
You know, you were named Collector of the Year. That is definitely a special honor, but you are very familiar with those kind of honors. You had this before, and you had it at the big daddy of car shows, the Pebble Beach Concours. Twice you've won Collector of the Year. What makes the cars you collect have such an appeal to the public?
Their sexiness. I like to use that term because I really fell in love with the pre-war cars several decades ago. There's something about the pre-war cars, their coachwork that was handcrafted, and each coach builder wanted to have their own type of identity. And so they were very, very creative. Not that cars today aren't creative, but it's hard to tell them apart sometimes. When you look at modern cars, they look very much the same when you look at SUVs or other types of cars in that category. But when you look at pre-war cars, you could look at it and say, wow, yeah, that's a Bowman & Schwartz, or that's a Murphy body, or that's a Soucek. So the sexiness, the styling, I think that's what makes those cars and some of my cars very special.
So when I look at you, I see a great car collector, a guy who really appreciates great cars. I've read a lot of information. I've seen you do interviews before, and you look like a car guy. And then I find out that actually you were a judge for 20 years in New Jersey. How did you start collecting cars, and how did that align with your day job?
Well, it started a long time ago. When I was young, hormones and gasoline mixed together. So I started it at a very young age, loving the automobile. I actually built my own go-karts from scratch and mini bikes back then. You know, slot cars, automobile magazines. You know, as I got older, you know, as they say, the toys got bigger. The toys got a little more expensive. You know, a boy and his toys.
But I guess it helps a little bit. I understand your family. They relish this car collecting thing almost as much as you do, and they're at these concours all the time with you, right?
Absolutely. My wife has been phenomenal. My wife, Margie, she has been so supportive and unselfish. Our daughter, Caroline, she is in the car hobby, not only personally, but professionally. She's in the car business. She's very knowledgeable. In fact, today she judged the pre-war European class, a very, very tough class.
So for our audience, you know, when we're talking about pre-war cars, some of you may know, we're talking Duesenbergs, Packards, Stutzes. That's the way it should be said, correct? Mm-hmm. I hear Stutzes all the time. Stutzes. I said, do you collect any cars that don't have a story attached to them? Because every car that I've seen that you've presented in these shows seems to have a story, like that Duesenberg, which was almost a barn find, right?
You know, that's very intuitive. The story behind the cars is even more sometimes intriguing than the car itself. I love the history of the cars. You know, for example, the poster car. Most people pronounce the poster car as Assata Fraschini, but in Italian, it's the correct pronunciation is Isolta Fraschini. And our car was ordered by Rudolph Valentino.
Really?
And he ordered the chassis from Isotto. It was delivered to the U.S., and he sent the chassis to Fleetwood Body Company in Fleetwood, Pennsylvania, to make the body. The process took a long time, and as fate would have it, Rudolph Valentino died of a burst appendix just days before the car was to be delivered. So, you know, stories like that are so, so intriguing. And they didn't know what to do with the car, because back then the car was almost $20,000, you know, 1927. You know, he had such a fan club. Women were throwing themselves at him, and they thought, well, why don't we divide up the car? Why don't we take it apart, and we'll sell the parts as souvenirs to these women? But fortunately, they didn't do that.
This is what happens when you get the marketing guys involved, yeah. Right? Can you tell us about any cars right now that you're working on, or is that confidential information in your business?
No, not at all. In fact, one of the cars that's here today is a 1931 Chrysler Imperial CG dual cowl phaeton, and it's actually fresh out of the box. By that I mean just freshly restored, and I brought it here just for exhibition, and in 2 weeks it'll be going to Pebble Beach to participate in the Pebble Beach Concours. So I thought it'd be nice for people to see a car that's never been shown, that's going to be going to Pebble Beach and be on the lawn at Pebble in several weeks.
Not to degrade or to lower the status of any of the cars that you have, but I always ask collectors, what is your favorite car in your collection right now?
I've been asked that question a lot. Well, you're saying in my collection now. I usually respond by saying, the next one.
Well, that's why I didn't ask that, because I know that's what you guys always say.
Now you got me on the spot. Oh, my gosh. Okay. My Duesenberg. I just love my Duesenberg.
You know, that is a great story, and I wish we had time, but what I will do is I'm going to put the story of your Duesenberg on our website, and I am going to tell people that if you come to a concours, my recommendation is get the program ahead of time and read about all the cars you're going to see before, because if not, you will go, you will see these cars, and you won't have time to read the stories, and then you're going to say, geez, I wish I would have spent more time at whatever car you're at, right? I mean, that's what you really got to do.
Absolutely.
Well, Joe, I congratulate you on being named Collector of the Year. I feel like I should call you Judge, because I was a lawyer, and I was always told you never really lose the title.
No. And I worked hard for that, and so I'm very proud of it. And I was on the bench for 24 years, and I really enjoyed it. You know, I love the law, but cars are my passion.
I can clearly understand that. Congratulations on being named Collector of the Year at this year's Concours d'Elegance. And please give your best regards to your family and congratulate them for me. And thank you so much for spending time with us today on Brembo Red.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, you've heard from the Concours Collector of the Year. And when we come back, we'll talk to one of the special judges here at the Concours, Mark Trussell, also known as Mr. Performance from Stellantis, formerly FCA. This guy knows about horsepower, and he knows about cars, and he'll be with us next here on Brembo Red. Back after this.
Why should you trust Brembo Brakes? Because 60 years of racing, testing, braking, and bettering. Because dogs in the road, indecisive squirrels, and that kid chasing the lost ball. Because tiny humans in the back seat and blind turns in front of you. Because every car should be equipped with the same kind of performance, safety, and comfort that manufacturers and professional drivers trust every day. Visit buybrembo.com and learn more about the most trusted brakes in braking.
Welcome back to Brembo Red with your host, Dan Sandberg.
We're back at the 2021 Concours d'Elegance in Plymouth, Michigan on a beautiful Sunday with really, really spectacular cars, old and new. And if you have a Concours as successful as this one, you have to bring in some great automotive judges to do the judging. And some of those judges, you're going to have to take my word for it, are people who shape what you and I drive every single day. And it's my pleasure to have one of those judges with me, Mark Trussell, who is one of those judges here at the Concours. He is with Stellantis. And you're going to ask me, who is Stellantis? Well, Stellantis is formerly FCA. And you're going to say, who is FCA? And I'm going to tell you the C in FCA is Chrysler. And everybody knows Chrysler. Everybody knows Dodge. And Mark is the head of performance, passenger car, and utility vehicle exterior design. What that means is he's responsible for Dodge. Everybody knows that. And SRT, and that's the street and racing technology. And that's, that's not your mom and dad's car here, right? This is the heavy-duty performance stuff, and he's got utility vehicle design also. Mark, this sounds like a super job.
Yeah.
Thanks for being with us here on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You had a hard day. You're going to be judging these cars at the Concours. And don't worry, this is recorded, so the winners will already be announced by the time this podcast gets out there. Anything that caught your eye that's really cool out there?
You know, this is probably my fifth year in judging here, and I'm happy that every year I get the muscle car class. And this year,
I wonder why that is.
Yeah, it's a fitting class. So I had the 1970 muscle car class this year, which is it's tough because there's so many cars that what I call give you goosebumps, you know. And what do you want to have in your garage? And I want them all, you know. It doesn't matter who makes them, you know. So.
Is there something in particular as a judge that you really look for in these cars?
Yeah, you know, part of the judging process for this event is, it makes it somewhat easier, I guess, is that it really is based on the aesthetic or the emotional quality of a vehicle, not necessarily the authenticity or is every bolt exactly the way it came. So you can put that emotional appeal into it. So certainly what I look for is the significance of, for 1970, for example, what's a significant car, color, engine, and, you know, is that combination in that class? So we look at it that way as well.
You know, I look at your history, and I read an article somewhere that said you won $1,000 in high school for, I think it was some scholarship money already. It was like an Autorama contest or something. And I remember the Autorama, actually. You've been involved with the Viper, the Challenger, the Charger, the Hellcat. You know, we even have a program manager in Brembo whose nickname is the Hellcat.
Love it.
The big, bold Dodge Ram trucks. You've been involved in all those trucks. I mean, these are legacy vehicles that people will always remember. Did you ever figure you'd be where you are today?
It's crazy because you're right. I mean, I was a car geek in high school. You know, I got told you're not paying attention in math, but I could draw a mean car, you know. And so this design competition, it really, you know, kicked off my design career. And I think about the significance. You know, people talk about the 70s and 60s as being significant in muscle car. But to me, it's today. So to be a part of the team that is creating some of these icons, it's so cool.
Have you always been a car guy? And do you have to be a car guy to be a great car designer?
I have always been a car guy, and I think you have to have an understanding of cars. I think a good car designer has to want to go in his garage and just stare at a car, you know, and you know, as most of us enthusiasts do.
Is there a part of the car that is your favorite that you think is the most expressive?
Oh, that's tough. You know, proportion of any vehicle is so key to having a successful design.
Explain that to our audience. What does proportion
mean
exactly?
Sure, yeah. So I'll use the Viper, for example. You know, where the wheels are versus where the occupants sit, this hood that is a mile long, what we call dash to axle. You know, the front wheel is way pushed forward on there. The car's low, it's wide. That, you know, that sets up the proportion of it. Certainly a Challenger then has a different proportion, but nonetheless, they're visually identifiable to themselves. They don't really blend in.
So when you're talking about that, I picture you looking at that side of the vehicle. And I always, when I get a designer on the podcast, I like to talk about the corners because there's something that Brembo has to do with the corner, right? I mean, we're in that corner. Those wheels and those tires and those brakes, in the case of Brembo, that really is a big part of the impression of the car, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's what we always talk about, right? Like I always talk about with Hellcats, like, oh, we've got 6-piston Brembos on here. And, you know, I'm a big fan of washing my cars myself. And, you know, being able to design a wheel that lets you see this masterpiece in there, but then being able to get your hand in there with a sponge to clean it, you know, and clean the wheels.
A man after my own heart.
No, it's to me that's so important in, you know, the aesthetic and then the function side of it as well.
Well, we're hearing a lot about SRTs, and the future, right, is about electricity these days, and we're hearing a lot, I'm not going to hold you to anything here, but we're hearing a lot about electrified performance cars. I want to talk to you about where we go with these vehicles as a designer, right? We have no real need for grills anymore. There's no humps inside the cars for transmissions. We have the frunk, which is going to show up in this business. Are you really excited about that? Is this giving you more playing field to play with here as a designer?
Yeah, you know, there's pros and cons, especially as a car person, right? You love a cold start of an engine in the morning. you know, that's going to go away. But I think, you know, the optimistic side of me as a designer says, yeah, I'm going to look at all of these new constraints and, you know, how can I design something that, you know, still has that same soul of whatever particular brand it is for us, whether it's Ram or Dodge, and put that in to the DNA of the vehicle, but in a new way.
they don't have to look like electric cars.
Exactly, exactly. I think there was a time where auto manufacturers thought that people wanted their electric car to look like an electric car, whatever that is. But I think, you know, people expect it to do the same thing and still look good and have identity to that brand.
And you will promise to all of our fans out there who love the SRTs and the Chargers and the Hellcats, they're going to be just as excited about the electrics as they are, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Pickup trucks, let's move over to that side of the business, because I just read another article that said that pickup trucks will exceed sedans in sales. And look, we've been hearing about pickups and trucks and SUVs are selling more than sedans, but this is just the pickup segment is going to exceed sedans. What's going on there? What design features in these vehicles now makes them common for everybody to have, not just contractors?
Yeah,
what's going on?
It's interesting because, yeah, people think of pickups as this utility or, I'm going to use it to haul some plywood, but, you know, the interiors of pickup trucks, you know, for speaking for Ram, I mean, they're luxury, you know, living rooms on wheels, the insides of these vehicles. You know, the amount of leg room in the back seat of a Ram 1500 is incredible. And I think that's what appeals to our customers is, you know, the little bit of height, that protective quality that a pickup truck gives to you, and then still having the functional attributes to it as well. But, yeah, it's crazy. There's no letting up in that segment right now.
Favorite car for you right now? What do you see out there right now that you say, geez, you know, that's kind of cool?
Oh, man, that's tough because I'm ADD when it comes to cars. But I will say from a vehicle manufacturer that I've always respected is Porsche. And I love, you know, a 911 because a 911 has evolved over time, similar to our Jeep Wrangler, right, from an aesthetic standpoint. So I've always been very fond of Porsche in that sense.
And it evolves, but it doesn't evolve, you know. How do you keep it fresh, but how do you still make it live for the legacy, right?
Exactly.
Mark Trussell, head of design for Dodge SRT Utility Vehicles at Stellantis. Mark, I really appreciate you stopping by. I know you got to run over and start doing the judging, and now we know who might win. We got a little bit of a hint what we might see. We really appreciate your time, and thanks for stopping by with us.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Brembo Red, and we'll change car brands in our next segment and talk to the Concours Elegance Enthusiast of the Year for 2021, Murray Callum, freshly retired chief designer for Ford Motor Company. Murray joins us right after this brief message here on Brembo Red.
Right now, our country feels divided, but there's a place where people are coming together.
I was nervous to talk to someone so different than me.
Me too.
Love Has No Labels and One Small Step are helping people with different political views, beliefs, and experiences connect through conversation, and it feels good.
This conversation gives me hope.
It gives me a lot of hope, too.
Take a step toward bringing our country and your community together. Start a conversation at lovehasnolabels.com/onesmallstep. A message from StoryCorps, Love Has No Labels, and the Ad Council.
Back at the 2021 Concours d'Elegance here in Plymouth, Michigan. And, you know, as we were saying, it is great seeing live people. No masks. You can actually shake their hands, give them a hug. And it's even better, in my opinion, to see car people who are having a great time with great cars, old and new, here at the Concours. And one of those great people is Murray Callum, who is Vice President of Design for Ford and Lincoln, sort of. We'll talk about that in a minute. And he's finally decided to put down his pencil and retire. Murray, thanks for joining us here at
the
Concours.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Glad to be, and it's great to be amongst people, isn't it?
Car people are great people, aren't they?
Yeah.
Having you here is even better. So let's talk some cars.
Okay, great.
I love talking to designers. Maybe we'll find out some things about the future. You know, your career and the influence on cars that you have, I mean, many of our listeners know these cars. Let me just list these. Ford Explorer, Mazda MX-5, CX-7, the Mustangs. We talk about Mustang all the time. F-150. We'll talk about that also, how you kind of shift from sedan to trucks. Ford GT, the newest Ford Mach-E. And also you've had stints with Ghia, Aston Martin, even Chrysler, and PSA Peugeot.
Yep.
First of all, how have you been so successful designing cars? What is the magic formula that's resonated so well with the public?
Well, I think I've been in the right place at the right time, first of all. But I also think that, you know, you need to have the right team of people around you to do the right job. So it's not really – I get a lot of credit where the credit should really go to the wider team.
And what do you look for in a designer?
It's interesting because obviously techniques and processes have changed quite a lot since I started my career, but I think it's still the same basic knowledge of surfacing and understanding volumes, proportions, and just understanding three dimensions is very important. So we still look for our designers to be able to sketch. That really tells you whether they can understand three dimensions and whether they can translate that from 2D into 3D as well. But as I say, the techniques have changed very much, and there's a lot more digital work now. But still, I think the basic needs for a designer are the same.
Let me ask you this, and maybe you'll think this is a silly question, but do you need to be a car guy to be a car
designer?
That's
a really interesting question. A lot of people are car guys, and a lot of people get into it because they are car guys. Sometimes that's a slight, and I'm a car guy, sometimes that's a little bit of a handicap because you've got so much knowledge of the past that you're always referring back to previous cars, and you know a little bit too much, and that sometimes sets your compass a little bit too rigidly. And sometimes when we get cars with guys who are not car guys, they come in and their ideas are a little bit more open. They actually challenge some of the rules or the unspoken rules and the norms of car design. So it's good to have that mix, I think.
When you look at your career now, like 38 years doing this, right?
Yeah.
Did you ever think you would be where you are today when you first started
out? Not at all. And I'll be honest, probably didn't have the aspirations to be there either. I just wanted to design cars, you know. I really just wanted to be able to, you know, get my designs into production and just work in that process, because it's a really nice creative process.
You have pretty diverse experience when it comes to geographic cultures.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we look at the auto industry, I think at least auto guys, they typically say, well, you got North America, the U.S.,
yeah.
You have Asia, Japan, obviously strong influence with Korea, yeah. And you have Europe.
Yeah, and now we have China.
And China, of course, is now a big influence. At the end of the day, when you're a designer, whether you're working in these countries or doing a car for these countries, do you have to take something into account about those cultures, or are we all the same, really, at the end of the day?
I think even in Ford, we've gone through a couple of phases where we think that we can design one car for the world, and we've tried that. And it can work, but it's actually, you need to understand a little bit more of the cultures, the geography, the people, the taste, and also just even the socioeconomic sort of values of the countries as well change. You know, a Fiesta in Britain, UK, for example, could be a family car, but here it's seen as an entry-level car. So that type of knowledge is really helpful. So I think you can tailor vehicles for the markets, but I think you need to understand the markets too.
In car design now, given the internet and given how easy it is and how fast you can see different designs, does that make it easier or harder in doing what we're talking about in designing for the countries? Can you be more accepted because people see this stuff ahead of time?
Yeah, I think that's been a really good learning for China, for example, because China is obviously one of the most expanding markets, growing markets in the world, and it's really interesting, the knowledge the Chinese customers has of new cars is probably the largest knowledge I've seen from a customer group before. You know, you can take a car to research, for example, and they can usually tell what brand it is, even if it's not bad. They have this voracious appetite. If you consider that they've gone from the sort of bicycle to the car in the space of maybe 30 years, that's the acceleration they expect. So I think if you tell them this is what you're going to drive in 10 years, they say, well, that's not advanced enough, that's not futuristic enough. So I think that's really healthy for designers, because it's nice to have that challenge for the customer. Say, well, you know, it's good, but you know, can you make it more advanced?
Mach-E,
yep.
Interesting electric car. But the thing that really amazes me about that car, it's gotten some great reviews. Everybody seems to love it. The Tesla killer, yeah. As you see in some of the articles. But there are no distinguishing features. If you were to walk by that car and you wouldn't know that it was electric, I'm not sure you would. What's your philosophy on designing electric cars? Should they look electric or not?
That's another really good question. And some people have taken both routes, I think. Even Tesla's. Tesla's just a great-looking car. It's not specifically electric. It's interesting to see from the first Tesla Model S came out, it had a grill. And now they've slowly moved, the grill has now disappeared. And that's maybe the only sort of defining feature that makes it non-gas-powered car. But when the Model S came out, it was just a great-looking car. They took all the proportional knowledge, you know, of making a good car, and they did it. So that was interesting. And I think we realized the same when we were doing the Mach-E. Not only was it had to be influenced by Mustang, which helped, you know, the brand itself, But I'm not sure if people really necessarily need to know it's electric or need to show off it's electric anymore. I think that sort of phase is gone.
As you as a designer with that skateboard technology that they have, which is, for those who are listening here who don't know what I am talking about, basically you have those batteries which are laying along the bottom of the car and the chassis and you design on top. Is that a good thing for a designer? Is it easier, harder?
It's both, I think. I think it can offer more flexibility. The one issue we do have is that because you start the car above the batteries, getting a low car is more difficult. So that's a little bit tougher, I think. So when we're talking about doing sports, electric sports cars, that you need to be a little bit more creative in how you position the batteries. Otherwise, you can't get the ground as low as you'd want it to be for a sports car. But otherwise, you know, in theory, the skateboard should be able to be flexible enough to do many different body styles on top of it.
Is there something in an electric car that is no longer there that was in a gas car that you're say, thank God, I don't want to have to deal with that anymore?
Yeah, an engine. No, it's I think what's good about it is maybe the development of it can be faster because of the amount of calibration you need for a gas engine car, the amount of testing you need is a lot more than for an electric car. So that's certainly helpful to get the car to market. And I think there is actually more flexibility in the package, which is really good. I mean, there's a lot of limitations to a vehicle with, you know, the engine in the front, or drivetrain in the rear, et cetera, there's a lot more packaging problems. However, between the two, there's still the same crash requirements needed and safety requirements needed. So that actually evens the playing field a little bit.
Let's talk about trucks, because pickup trucks are just out of control. All right, you were involved with the F-150, and I just saw a statistic, which in 2021 looks like the first year that pickup trucks will exceed in sales the number of sedans that are sold.
Yeah.
Not just, you know, we always talk about, well, trucks versus cars, meaning SUVs and pickups, but this is pickups alone.
I know.
They'll sell more pickups than they do sedans. What's going on there, in your opinion? What design features have changed in the pickup that all of a sudden it's not just for contractors anymore? Everybody wants a pickup.
Well, I think the pickup is not a utility vehicle anymore. It's not a basic utility vehicle. It has become a much more usable product. Its ride quality is fantastic. Its NVH is great. So all the reasons why people wouldn't have bought a pickup, you know, 20 years ago, they're not really there anymore, apart from maybe just the physical size of it. But then you've got that usefulness of and you're talking to a person who's driving a pickup. And if you'd asked me 25 years ago if I'd ever drive a pickup, I would say, no way. No, cars are what I love. But it's not changing as fast in the US, but it's even changing more in the rest of the world. Pickups are beginning to get more attractive as well. I suppose it's just that sort of flexibility of the ability to carry things when you might need to. The great advantage with the F-150 Lightning is it's not only a pickup, but it's also got a frunk, in what we call a trunk in the front, which is a frunk in front. So you've got the benefits of a sedan with a trunk, but also a pickup bed. And also, it's a great thing to drive.
And did you ever think you'd see pickups that the interior space was almost like full-size SUV, right?
Yeah,
two rows and everything else?
No, it's surprising. And it really, it's not just the size, but it's actually the sort of luxury, the level of luxury in pickups these days is fantastic. So, and I suppose that's where the American consumer has really driven us. I mean, they've really asked for bigger, better, and more luxurious, so we've given it to them.
So you're retired now?
I'm retired, just, yes.
I mean, you have this creative itch, if you will, that I know is out there. What do you plan on doing to solve that problem?
Well, I'm still just enjoying the feeling of retirement. I'm still sort of dreaming a little bit of work, and I have these weird sort of nightmares about things not getting done, and some of the people at work, and then I wake up and I think, oh, I don't need to do that. So that's great. So, but I'm just taking it easy at the moment. I'm doing a lot of things. Just I'm actually working on a few cars, old cars, nothing new. But I think I'm sort of getting itchy to maybe get into some design work soon, but I don't know what it'll be. It'll be just something for me at first, I think.
You know, Ford came out with that Bronco. I understand you have this love, and your wife may have some love, for an older Bronco.
Yes, yes. And it's actually sitting outside, actually. And I've had it for, I think, about 7 or 8 years now, before we were redoing the Bronco at work. And I've got a few old cars, but my wife, this is her favorite because it's such a lovely car to drive. It's got thin pillars, it's got lots of glass, it can't go very fast, but it's just a really nice car. It's a 76 Broncos, so it's one of the later ones, later the first series, but it's a great looking car, and it is fun to drive.
And how many entries do you have in the concours?
Well, because I'm the enthusiast of the year this year, they asked me to bring a number of cars, so I've actually got 7 cars coming. They're not all mine, but I'll have a display of the 7 cars.
Well, I want to congratulate you for, first of all, having that Enthusiast of the Year title tacked on to your resume. I do really appreciate all the work that you've done with Brembo in the past. I know you're a big fan of nice, fancy brakes.
We like brakes, yeah.
And I wish you the best of luck in retirement and good luck tomorrow at the concours.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, that's it for this special episode of Brembo Red. Another tough day in the car business, spending a Sunday in the summer looking at beautiful cars on the fairways here at the Inn of St. John's in Plymouth, Michigan. Thanks again to Judge Joseph Cassini III, Collector of the Year, Mark Trussell from Stellantis, who also got to be a judge, at least for the day, here at the concours. And again, thanks to Murray Callum from Ford for stopping by on the podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please drop us a note at podcast@us.brembo.com or leave us a nice rating or comment wherever you downloaded this podcast. We are always glad to hear from our listeners. This is Dan Sandberg from Brembo. Take care, and I'll see you soon.
You've been listening to Brembo Red with your host, Dan Sandberg. Send your comments, questions, and suggestions to podcast@us.brembo.com. Brembo Red is produced and copyrighted by Brembo North America.